May it please the court, my name is David Simonson. I represent the grievant appellant, Evelyn Osterlo. The question before the court today is whether the final decision of the hearing officer in the grievance process is contrary or contradictory to law. That is the question before the court.
Mr. Simonson, as with many of the grievance proceedings, the record, there's a lot of back and forth in the record, and this one, of course, I think ended up with three hearing officers' decisions ultimately. And from your brief, I think I understand what happened, but I want to make sure I understand your position. The hearing officer found all of the underlying factual matters, allegations of the department to be correct, but he concluded that given the first warning, which created a three-month reevaluation period, that it was his understanding that that essentially created a safe harbor. And as long as she didn't have a new offense different and separate for what she was being, for what the performance improvement plan essentially was supposed to address during that 3 months, that it would be contrary to policy to terminate her during that 3 month, what is essentially is a safe harbor period. And therefore, from that, he concluded that any retaliation during the 3 month safe, disciplinary action up to and including the ultimate termination had to be retaliatory. Do I understand that correctly?
I think the timeline you're giving is basically accurate, but I disagree, I think, with the manner in which you stated that as a matter of interpreting what occurred.
Then please explain to me where I'm wrong.
In the hearing officer's second decision, I think that is really the key decision of the hearing officer, because in that decision, I believe the hearing officer makes clear that he will accept the director's view of policy. There was a disagreement, certainly, in the first decision of the hearing officer, and then the first administrative review, and then in the second administrative review, that carries forward as well. The hearing officer did not feel that it was consistent with policy during the three-month evaluation period, and that evaluation period ran toward the end of January 2017, so that the 3 months would have taken us to the end of April. And of course, she is given two group twos in March on the 16th and 30th, terminated on March 30th upon the issuance of the second group two. The hearing officer felt that the issuance of the two group twos within 2 weeks of each other for the same exact alleged offense within the 3 months violated policy. The director said that did not violate policy and that an agency could, in fact, do what it did. Now, it didn't say the agency had to do what it did, but the director made clear it was within the discretion of the agency pursuant to policy to do what it did, issuing the two group twos within the 3 months. But what the hearing officer found as fact was the motivation for making that discretionary decision was retaliation.
What was the basis of that finding from his opinion? It appeared, at least the first one, and it seemed to me in the second one, was his belief that the only potential explanation for the subsequent discipline, that the reason he found retaliation was it was the only reason he could conclude that they would violate what he essentially viewed as the 3 month safe harbor.
Well, I disagree with that interpretation, because when you look at page 52 of the appendix and 53 of the appendix, which are pages 8 and 9 of the September 5th decision of the hearing officer, which is the second decision, the hearing officer states at the top of page 8 of the second decision, page 52 of the joint appendix, the grievant credibly testified that her supervisor expressed anger and offense to her regarding what she said at prior grievance proceedings, which of course were on February 3rd, 2017, and that during the early steps of the present grievance, he suggested the grievant simply retire rather than risk loss of benefits from being fired. Those are factual findings that the grievant credibly testified that her supervisor expressed anger and offense to her about her testimony in the prior grievance proceeding. He goes on and says more, making what I submit to the court are factual findings of improper retaliatory motivation. And he says at the bottom of page 9 of the decision, the appendix, page 53, on reconsideration, I have considered DHRM's policy interpretation of June 23, 2017, which permits a supervisor to issue a written notice for continuing poor performance during a re-evaluation period, not multiple written notices for the same. The excessive discipline, and when he says excessive discipline, the hearing officer found that it was appropriate for discipline to be issued, and he held that a group one would have been appropriate. So when he's saying excessive, he simply means that the agency, as part of its discretionary decision on discipline, issued the two group twos in discharge. And he's finding that excessive was obviously intended to accomplish an early termination without allowing the reevaluation plan to run its established course. That's just a fact.
Well, but in that he says, written notice for continuing poor performance during a reevaluation period. He's commenting on, in that very paragraph, about, okay, DHRM told me I was wrong the first time. You can go with additional discipline during a reevaluation period. That's policy. However, he says, the next, after the dash, not multiple written notices for the same. If DHRM says no, that is still potentially appropriate under the policy in its next review, what is the basis for his conclusion?
The basis for his conclusion is the policy really, the correct interpretation of the policy is not material to the findings of fact that the reason the agency chose to do it was improper retaliation. You can have discretionary management authority. You can have an at-will employee. You can terminate that employee for any reason you want, good, bad, or indifferent. But you cannot terminate that at-will employee for certain reasons which are illegal. We have a similar system under the state employee grievance procedure. Yes, the agency has discretion, and the director says what the policy is to give discretion, to give that multiple discipline. But what the hearing officer is saying is, as a matter of fact, that the reason that discretion was exercised in that manner under the policy was improper retaliation. And we don't, I'm sorry.
Well, I guess my next question is, regardless of whether the circuit court properly understood the standard it was to apply, given the unique tripart nature of this type of review, all of the facts necessary to either affirm the agency's final decision or reverse it were found by the hearing officer, and they're not going to change no matter what, correct? All the facts necessary to either affirm or reverse were found by the hearing officer. All of the policy decisions necessary to affirm or reverse have been found by DHRM. Our role is very, very limited, and the factual record wouldn't change on remand in any way, shape, or form.
Your Honor, we don't really know, because one of the things that has occurred procedurally is, in the second administrative review, which is the appendix 489-94, the director orders the hearing officer to simply ignore his own findings of fact and uphold determination. The director does not return to the hearing officer and say, hearing officer, I still don't feel like you understand the policy. You need to reconsider. The director does not do that. The director orders the hearing officer to reverse his findings of fact and uphold the termination. And we know that's true because the hearing officer himself says that on page 497 of the appendix. By administrative review ruling issued October 17, which is the second admin review, EEDR, the director, overruled the hearing officer's policy interpretation and factual findings. That is what is contradictory to law. That is what requires a reversal of what occurred in the circuit court and sending this matter back down. Because the director could have said, you still have the policy wrong, Mr. Hearing Officer. Take another look at this. We don't know what the hearing officer would have done had that occurred. It did not occur. So when the court says, well, we have all the findings we need, I don't think that's true, Your Honor, with respect, because the director acted contrary to law, telling the hearing officer that his factual findings were wrong, which violates the tripartite system. And we know that occurred because the hearing officer tells us it did. So we come before the court asking for reversal because this final decision of the hearing officer is contradictory to law, because on its face it says that the law requiring tripartite review, the factual findings of the hearing officer are final and binding, was not followed. And the grievant lost out because of that, and we asked the court to reverse.
You are in your rebuttal time, but...
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Ryan Waddell. I'm here on behalf of the Department of Social Services today. Not one single law has been identified that's been violated. The law that was the subject of the appellant's briefs, Virginia Code Section 2.23001.5, subsection C, only says that a hearing officer's factual findings as to material issues and the basis for those findings is final if it's consistent with law and policy. In this case, it wasn't consistent with policy.
My understanding of Ms. Ostrolo's argument is that in the second policy review, DHRM went beyond policy and dictated a factual finding. And the hearing officer may have thought that or not thought that, but that's the argument. And it seems to me that that's the argument that's been fairly presented, and that would be consistent with whether the hearing officer's determination is final. Why isn't it correct, if you believe it is not correct, that position? What's your best argument that the DHRM did not invade the province of the fact finder, which, since we're not allowed to do it, I'm pretty confident they're not allowed to do it?
Well, under Virginia Code 3006, DHRM, and under Virginia Code Section 2.21202.15, the DHRM and EDR are tasked with with rendering all final decisions, rendering any procedural matters relating to or pertaining to procedural compliance with the grievance procedure. The grievance manual itself, it's in footnote 8 of the second hearing officer, or the second administrative ruling, says that under the grievance policy, it's section 6.4, that if a hearing officer makes a decision that is contradictory to policy, EDR can't rule in favor of any party. He has to direct the hearing officer to fix the noncompliance. It has to. Hearing officer, or EDR, or DHRM are not, they don't have to accept a determination based on incorrect application of policy. And in this case, that's exactly what happened. The facts in the hearing officer's second decision that are material in this case are that all the conduct as stated in the written notices occurred. Because DHRM determined as a matter of policy, which isn't reviewable, that conduct rises to the level of a Group 2 notice, and because the agency was permitted to issue two Group 2 notices, which in itself would allow the agency to terminate Ostrolo, everything else is immaterial because the hearing officer found that conduct actually occurred.
Even if the Level 2 notices were issued for a retaliatory purpose?
I don't believe they were issued for retaliatory purposes.
My question is hypothetically, would that, if they were issued for assume that everything is consistent with policy and the underlying facts would have supported termination, but assume that the motivation of the person issuing the Group 2 notice was retaliatory. Assume that. Is that an appropriate termination consistent with law?
I believe that it is consistent with the Virginia State grievance procedure, because all that's required under DHRM policy 1.60, and she was terminated for accumulation of written discipline. Is the factual determination is if the conduct occurred as stated in the written notices, that's not reviewable by this court. That has occurred. The policy determination is that conduct in itself warrants issuance of two group notices, and those two group notices render termination, then the ultimate result has to be termination, if that's what the agency chooses to do. If there was improper retaliation, I think that she would have a different type of lawsuit, and it wouldn't be under the Virginia.
Well, I've asked you to assume she has an improper retaliation.
I still believe because the conduct occurred and because that conduct, as a matter of policy, justified the discipline that was issued, and because that discipline consequently results in termination, I believe as a matter of law that, and as a matter of policy, that the termination has to stand. And
counsel, are you then arguing essentially that a grievant, if terminated by retaliation, has no remedy under the policy?
I'm not, just in the hypothetical, I do not. I don't believe that the hearing officer in this case even can say that retaliation is a factual determination. It's a mixed question of policy, law at best.
Well, but my question is it your position that a grievant essentially has no remedy for retaliation?
Well, under retaliation, the reason for being issued that discipline is for engaging in protected activity, not for the underlying conduct that is reported in the written notices. So in that situation, the reason for issuing her the discipline would be for engaging in protected activity. In this situation, the reason for issuing her the discipline was because she was not performing her job and not following her supervisor's instructions.
Is it then the Commonwealth's position, the department's position, that it doesn't matter what their motivation was so long as the underlying facts would have supported the issuance of the discipline? It doesn't matter whether it was retaliatory or not, so long as factually that type of discipline could be issued.
Ultimately, I believe that that is my position, and I believe that that's supported by Virginia Code Section 2.23004, which states that management has the right to make decisions regarding its employees, which obviously includes terminating them, when to terminate them. And I believe that while people could second guess whether that decision is correct, it's not the purview of the court to do that, and ultimately that determination is reserved for agency management based on the specific needs of their agency.
Under the policy, then, how does a grievant defend him or herself?
They have a hearing, and they get to present evidence. They get to call witnesses. They get to cross-examine witnesses. The hearing officer in this case found that Osterloh's supervisor credibly testified that she wasn't performing and that she was having issues under the reevaluation plan. And ultimately, in his second opinion and in his first opinion, said that the conduct stated in the written notices occurred.
So the only defense would be, I didn't do the only factual defense.
This is how I was performing adequately. This is why I followed instructions.
Is I didn't do what they allege I did.
Correct.
The only policy defense that you contend is available is, even if I did what they said I did, it doesn't warrant a group two. And to you, that is not a hearing officer call. That is a DHRM call. Does it merit group two punishment?
Correct. And DHRM made that call, and that call is not reviewable by this court. It's binding under Barton, Quisenberry, all of the cases under the tripartite review procedure.
In his initial ruling that was subject to DHRM review, do you believe that the hearing officer crossed over and violated the tripartite policy and made a policy call?
I do, and what is particularly troubling is that before his final decision was rendered, DHRM issued an official opinion as requested by the hearing officer regarding the interplay between policy numbers 140 and 160. 140 is the reevaluation plan, and it's in the joint appendix at 362 and 363, and the official interpretation provided by DHRM is the reevaluation process does not prevent the agency from taking disciplinary action based on the employee's poor performance or other reasons stipulated in Policy 160.
Do you agree that the circuit court's recitation of the standard it was applying, the substantial evidence standard under the APA, well, one, do you agree that that's what the circuit court said it was doing?
I don't believe that any of the circuit court's legal conclusions are really a deference. I don't think the court needs to address
that. That wasn't my question. Do you agree that that's what he said he did?
I believe so, yes.
And that's wrong?
Yes.
Okay. So the only way we could affirm would be under the right for the wrong reason doctrine, because the circuit court applied the wrong legal standard. There's no question about that, right? Is that correct?
Well, because it's a de novo review, I think you're just affirming the hearing officer's decision.
The question is, are all the factual findings for us to find on the alternative basis made? Are all the policy determinations made? You've heard your opponent say he doesn't think they're all made. If it's your position that they were all made and the record is what the record is, tell me why.
The factual findings that are unreviewable and binding on the court are that Osterle's supervisor testified credibly that the conduct in the written notices occurred, that there was nothing to suggest the agency's view of the claimant's work performance was retaliatory beyond the agency's procedural actions, that the agency addressed noticeable performance deficiencies, and that Osterle, however, did not present sufficient evidence to show that the agency's evaluation of her performance was motivated by improper factors. So the facts are there. The poor performance was there. The failure to follow instructions was there. That was also an improper policy determination by the hearing officer, but DHRM said that under these facts, as accepted, it would be a failure to follow instructions. So the facts are there. The policy is there that conduct rises to the level of Group 2 written discipline, and that the agency was permitted to issue 2 Group 2 written notices. And because 2 Group 2 written notices under DHRM Policy 160 can result in termination, the final result is there. Osterle was terminated for accumulating written discipline. And because...
What is the effect of the retaliation finding?
It's immaterial. And
Well, is it a question of fact or policy or... I mean, really, we just ignore it, and he just put it in, and it didn't matter.
It's immaterial, and under 2 point, it didn't matter. What he was trying to do was mitigate his own finding somehow. And it's a non sequitur because, and I quote directly from page 10 of his opinion, because there is insufficient policy basis for issuing 2 Group 2 written notices with early termination, and I skip a little, in the absence of any other explanation for why the agency rushed to shorten the 3-month reevaluation termination based on 2 Group written 2 notices, the reasonable inference is that the agency improperly retaliated. This contradicts the fact that their determination of the conduct wasn't motivated by retaliation or anything.
Is that number one or number two?
Number two.
Okay.
He was just trying to mitigate his own findings, and he cannot do that.
What page of the joint appendix is that?
It's on 462. It's the second paragraph, second sentence. It starts with because, and the first paragraph is instructive also. But yes, ultimately, if he found the conduct existed, other than his misinterpretation of policy, then the only conclusion that he could have arrived to was that Osterle's termination for accumulation of written discipline needed to be sustained because the conduct occurred and the agency was free to issue that sort of discipline. And he just went out of his way twice to try to prevent that outcome. But that's the only outcome that could follow from everything that is in the record. And if your honors don't have any more questions, I'll rest on brief.
Thank you.
Your honors, the law gives agencies great discretion in how to manage their workforce, how to handle employees. Well, one thing they cannot do is retaliate for prior grievance activity. That is the law. That is not part of policy. That is not part of discretion. That is the law as set forth in the Virginia Code and decisions of this court and the Supreme Court of Virginia. You cannot retaliate for prior grievance activity. When you read the September 5th decision, the second decision of the hearing officer, he finds facts. He finds that the supervisor, Mr. Osterloh, was offended, was angered, was upset, made the threat of, hey, you need to stop this or you may be fired and lose your benefits.
Well, what do I do with the portion of the second hearing officer's decision that was just quoted? Because there is insufficient policy basis for issuing two Group 2 written notices with early termination before the end of the three-month reevaluation plan, the reasonable conclusion is that the agency acted from an improper motivation. He ties it to his conclusion regarding policy, which then DHRM says, you're wrong about the policy. I mean, that's his stated reason.
He says insufficient, which I think at worst to our position is ambiguous. In other words, he's saying, okay, you state the policy that gives the discretion, but I think the policy in terms of requiring what you did doesn't do that, doesn't require that you do what you did. Therefore, it's insufficient to remove from the table the fact that there was retaliation, improper retaliatory motive. And, Your Honor, the second administrative review does not tell the hearing officer, look, you're still fighting me on policy, get the policy right. Doesn't do that. Orders the hearing officer to ignore his findings of fact.
Well, except the ones that finds that she did everything that they alleged that she did.
Except the ones that favor the agency position. But he essentially, the administrative review process basically orders the hearing officer to simply uphold determination. When you read the second administrative position, I think it key that the director never references the factual findings of anger, upset, threat. That's not in the second administrative review.
If you were to prevail, what would the remand order say?
The court has options, certainly. The court could simply remand to the circuit court for a proper review to give Ms. Osterloh in the circuit court the review to which she's entitled under the statute, which she did not get. I think that would be the narrowest holding this court could enter, simply sending it back to the circuit court.
But the circuit court's in no better position to do the legal part of the tripartite review than we are.
True, Your Honor, because it's de novo here, but that would at least be then consistent with the review procedure as set out in the code. Or you could remand to the hearing officer to accomplish what the director perhaps could have done in the second administrative review, which is to direct the hearing officer not to issue a final decision which on its face denies the grievant the rights to which she's entitled. This final decision says that I'm accepting the order to ignore my factual findings. That is not a proper final decision, and it must be overturned. Exactly how the remand would occur, again, I think this court has options. Obviously, we request that you simply remand to the circuit court with an order to provide for the attorney's fees and the other relief in addition to a reinstatement or other appropriate relief. Or this court could enter a final decision along those lines or take other approaches. I think there's a lot of options, and I think at a minimum, this final decision cannot stand because on its own face it says Ms. Osterloh did not get the statutory review to which she is entitled. But no more questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will thank you both for your argument. We'll come down.